हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्तिः 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 ॐ जय श्रीकृष्णचैतन्यप्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे.
Okay, so page 35. The word Brahma Bhuta, Srimad Bhagavatam 4:30-20, refers to becoming a Brahmana, or understanding what is Brahman. Brahma Janatiti Brahmanaha. One who is Brahma Bhuta is always happy, prasanatma. Because if you're situated on the Brahman platform, then means you don't have any material identification, right? So you're transcendentally situated. So naturally be happy. It's what makes you unhappy, right? How the material world works, right? And so getting rid of that, you stop being unhappy. Does that make sense? So therefore, then one's always in the natural state of the living entity of being happy. But that's just the happiness just of the Atmarama, just that neutral state. Then you have the position where, then by devotional service, then it becomes a positive happiness. Right? Then it's dynamic. Because otherwise, then the spiritual position in here, then is only that it's not material. But when one functions on the platform, the spiritual world itself, then relationship with the Lord, then it takes on a dynamic. Then the relationships, the happiness becomes increased, right? And basically unlimitedly. So it's practically, you could say, the happiness of not being connected to the material world is, you know, very great. You would compare it like unlimited, though it's not. But it's just a natural position. But then when you take it and make it positive into association with Krishna and the devotees, then that becomes unlimited. Why? Because you're connected with the unlimited. Right, so when Krishna's happy, he's unlimited, then you connect with that, that experience is there. Does that make sense? Yeah. Na sochati na kanchati, he is never disturbed about material necessities, because they're just what needed for the body, they will come according to whatever it happens, either just whatever you do or whatever Krishna wants to arrange. Sama sarveshu bhute shu, he is ready to bestow blessings upon everyone equally. So, equally means not by volume, right? Means in the last 2,500 years, then in the Western culture, equal means volume, right? Before that, it didn't mean volume. It meant what was according to the individual's nature. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like the parents, they're drinking what they're drinking, the baby's drinking their bottle of milk. Right, so now, by the modern context, then we want to make this all equal. So does that mean everybody has a bottle like that, or the kid sitting around there with his cup of Joe? Right, you know, what is it? So that's the problem: is it doesn't match, it doesn't work, because equally means according to your nature. It doesn't mean by volume, right? So since the Ionians, then everything became seen in the relative sense. So then, according to that, it's just whatever is the popular concept of the day of what is truth, then that becomes the standard. So it's not that there's an absolute standard. Understand? So this is the difference, is when it says, Sama Sarveshu Bhuteshu, he is ready to bestow blessings on everyone equally, that means according to the absolute standard. Right? not according to the sentiment, no, but everybody gets, but everybody's not going to get. Because those guys over there, they're not nice, and these guys, you know, the capitalists and that, and then the corporate guys over here, and then all these, you know, guys in the government, they're all not going to get. So how is this equal? So it's only those people I think should get, they should get equally. You understand? There's a problem there. But here it's according to their nature, people get. So you deal nicely, they'll reciprocate nicely. You don't deal nicely, then they'll just stay neutral. You understand? So everyone gets according to whatever is there. So if you do the work, everyone can get. So in other words, it's the principle is like, let's say, the store is here, anyone who comes and pays 10 rupees then gets this. So it's equal. Anybody can get it. But you have to come and pay the 10 rupees. So who comes and pays the 10 rupees gets. Right? Not the sentimental, whether they pay or not, whether they come or not, everybody should get. How does that work? You understand? So you can see the Vedic is more practical. It's dealing with the actual nature. Someone wants, they make the endeavor. They don't want, why they should get. Does that make sense? You know, of those who are qualified. Does that make sense? Those who you have to take care of, the dependents, you take care of them however is appropriate. But the whole idea is that this equalness has to be seen according to the absolute standard. This modern, oh, everybody gets, you know, we say equal opportunity. But the point is what does that mean? Does that make sense? So that's, it's according to nature. And then that means who defines nature? Not us, the absolute standard. Then what is our dealings with that nature? We don't define. That's also by the absolute standard. So in that way, then, that's real equality. That makes sense? This other thing is that, you know, then everybody has to get the same. How does that work? You know, what would they do with it? Okay. Mad bhaktim labhate param, Bhagavad Gita 18:54. Then he became a Vaishnava. Right, so devotee then means he has these qualities. Right, so we take up the devotional process, so we're counted amongst the devotees. But the devotee they're talking about here means someone on the platform of pure devotional service. Because that's the standard. Right, so as much as we're following the standard, then to that much, then we could be considered a devotee. Right? Means that someone's just taking the principle of trying to serve the Lord. They're a devotee. But we have to remember, we're a devotee in practice. Right? And so then once you come to the platform of, how you say, pure devotion, then you can say, now that's properly situated. That's solid. Right? And then from there, then you're trying to get from pure devotion into pure unalloyed devotion. Does that make sense? So that's a very important aspect. Is that it's always talked about, then one will be a devotee. So that means one will be a devotee of standard, according to the absolute. But before that, one is trying. Does that make sense? Just like, let's say, the first grader, are they a student? Yes. But what are they learning? Right? 1, 2, 3, 4, you know, it's like whoopee. You know what I'm saying? So the whole point is they're a student. But according to the modern academy, you don't actually become a student until later. You know, because as you go, when you get to high school, then they'll tell you, forget everything you learned before, now we're going to teach you the real stuff, right? Then you get to college, as an undergraduate, I say, forget everything you learned before, now we're going to teach you the real stuff. Right? And then when you get to postgraduate, then they're going to say, now we're actually going to teach you. Like that. Does that make sense? It doesn't make sense, but, you know, do you understand what I'm talking about? So that's the principle, is that there's always the concept of that you're part of the scene, but then you become actually part of the scene. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's just like you'd be a member of something, then you're a full member or a patron. They have levels of how you can be a member. So that's the point, is that devotional service, then pure devotion, then now you can say, now this is standard. And that the progress from there, that will be steady and dynamic. Well, before that, before pure devotional service, it may move nicely, it may not. You know, all these different things, it's because there's distractions by all these different things. Okay.
On the previous point about purity, so a Brahman is supposed to give knowledge and charity. And the
Brahman is supposed to give knowledge and charity.
Yeah. And pure knowledge of Krishna consciousness. So in that particular case, he should not see whether one is patra or patra. Like one is,
he should not see whether there's
qualified or not qualified, but he should give the transcendental knowledge to everybody without any discrimination.
That means you're making a statement, it's a question,
it's a statement.
It's a statement. Okay. So, means if we're saying, making a statement that since the Brahmana gives in charity transcendental knowledge, he should give that no matter whether someone's qualified or not. But then one of the ninth offense of the holy name is don't preach this to the faithless.
Mm-hmm.
So, the point is everybody can chant.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone can take prasad, and everyone can take darshan, these people, but the knowledge itself, then you give according to what someone can digest.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're dealing with a general audience, then basically what's the once you balance out the audience, the natures that are there, that's what you're speaking to. You don't give beyond that, because what will they do with that? You know, it's just like we give this knowledge freely to everyone. So then, you know, the quantum physicist, you know, professor at the university, they've been asked to come down to the, you know, grade school and talk with the kids there to inspire them. So then he just sits there and writes one of his equations on the boards. There's a mathematical equation, but there's no numbers in it, you know, one of those ones. And then goes on and then starts talking, you know, just, you know, the fine points between the string theory and particle theory and all these different things and, you know, that kind of jazz. So will that work? Will they get any benefit? Will the kids be inspired? No. So the point is to someone who's qualified, you give. That's the whole point. Equality means you're qualified, you get. You're not qualified, you don't get. Not that everybody gets despite. You know, otherwise, let's say we go, the Brahmachari Kitchen is sponsoring lunch today. And you go and sit down there in the line. Okay? Brahmacharis come by with their bucket. They have a dabu. You know dabu? Dabu is those big, the Indian metal spoons. They're big round, like a big bowl with that big metal handle on it. So that's the only spoon they use. Right? And so every plate gets one of those spoons. Right? Then they come along with the sabji. Right? And since it's a special occasion, it will be, you know, the soy chunk sabji, right? Like that. And that coming along, you will also get one full spoon. Everybody goes down there. Are you good? And we've only gotten that. We haven't gotten to the dal yet and the other stuff. Why not? Because you're supposed to distribute equally. You understand? So this whole concept of equal means volume. Who worries about volume? Yeah, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, Shudras. Who worries about volume? Vaishyas and Shudras. It's numbers. You understand? While Brahmins and Kshatriyas, what do they worry about? Quality, the standard. So in other words, until the Ionians, then you had the priests, you had the kings, they set the standard, which was based on an absolute concept. Right? Whether that civilization understood absolute or not, but whatever it is, what they thought was the absolute that they didn't make up, they judged everything according to that. But with the Ionians, then it's relativity. No, but it's all, you know, according to what we say and this and that, and so this whole concept of vox populi, all that kind of jazz came up. So then it shifts it from the mentality of the Brahmins and Kshatriyas to the Vaishyas and Shudras. Right? And so since the Vaishyas make money off the Shudras, then happy Shudras spend their money. Unhappy Shudras do not spend money. Unless they're really unhappy, then they go down to the pub, right? Like that. Or it's a tough day, you go shopping, but then you have to have money to do that. So the whole point is that, generally speaking, then it goes to volume. And so then Shudras being happy, then the Vaishyas are happy. So Vaishyas don't mind working on Shudras' volumes of numbers, because then they get the profit. You understand? Because both of them, it's numbers. So just as long as the numbers is Shudras spending and Vaishyas receiving, then that's good, because there's tons of Shudras, a few Vaishyas. It works out. They're happy. You know, can say, oh, but there's less Vaishyas and there's more Shudras. They don't care. They're happy with that. Otherwise, if, you know, it's like, you know, one shot gets one customer, because there's equal amounts of both, it wouldn't work out so good. But one shop, you know, 200 customers, it's good. In fact, it can be 1,000, 10,000. Yeah, they're cool. You know what I'm saying? The Vaishyas don't mind being a minority. That's the one thing they do not mind.
They want monopoly. Huh?
Yeah, that's even better. You know, minority to the point of monopoly, that's perfection. You understand? So that's what's changed. So now when we say equality among Shudras, that means everybody gets the same. But what's the standard? What do you do with it? You know what I'm saying? That's the difficulty. So then, the devotee, he refers to Brahman, he understands Brahman, means in other words, it's always in connection with Krishna, therefore, because it's always connected with Krishna, not Maya, therefore, he is always happy and not disturbed about material necessities. He knows Krishna will take care, Krishna will protect, therefore, he is always happy. Then, he's able to see everybody properly, you know, equally, and therefore, he's always situated on the transcendental platform as a devotee. Okay? So we have to use these absolute standards. In this age, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur introduced the sacred thread ceremony for his Vaishnava disciples, with the idea that people should understand that when one becomes a Vaishnava, he has already acquired the qualifications of a Brahmana. See, because before, Brahmin, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas, they all went through the sacred thread ceremony. And then Brahmins all practice it, because that's all they got. They have the two-piece thread. More than that, they don't have. The Kshatriyas and Vaishyas have a little more, so they're not worried about it. Some of them practice, some of them don't. And so then he made it that everybody would get, because they didn't necessarily do the Upanayanam ceremony before taking up Krishna consciousness. That makes sense? So this way then, it's there. So the idea is that everyone would see them minimally on the standard of a Brahmana. Because Vaishnava means a realized Brahmana. It means he understands there's Brahman, and then a Brahman, then para Brahman is Krishna. So they're the topmost Brahman by that basis of understanding. Then within that, then how well they do. Just like, let's say, someone is in Harvard, or like you were saying here, IIT. Okay? And of the IITs? IIT Bombay.
To be more specific.
Which one?
IIT Poval. It's about part of Bombay suburb.
Poverty.
Poval.
That place is Pavai.
Pavai, okay. Okay. So IIT Pavai. Do we need to get a street or you know, like One Tree Hill or something? You know, it's got a very specific number. That was also a school, right? So Pavai, right? So now we have that. So then someone's in that. So do we consider that's good? Anybody, if you said from a student, you know, in India, that they're going to IIT and they're going to the Bombay Pavai, I say IIT, right? Wouldn't it be easy to just say Mumbai instead of Pavai? Whatever. But they're all in the same barter, right? Papa Baba Ma. Right? So that Pavai, Mumbai.
Mumbai.
Mumbai. Yeah, Mumbai. Yeah. All that stuff. So, someone's going there. Would one consider that a student there is something special? Okay. But amongst the students is their gradation. So that's the whole point. So when someone takes up devotional service, they're on that topmost platform that they understand Krishna is the Supreme Lord. So they're counted in that number, you know, of being special. But within that, then you have neophyte, madhyama, and uttama.
When Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he gave initiation, Brahman initiation. He introduced all the mantras except for Brahma Gayatri, or it was before?
No, Brahma Gayatri. No. See, is the Pancharatra Gayatri is anybody who gets initiated by Pancharatra can get.
And what was it before? Before
they didn't. The Vaishnavas wouldn't deal with the Brahma Gayatri. If you had received it as Upanayana because of your family tradition, then you chanted it, you wore the thread. You didn't, they didn't worry about it. You just got the Pancharatric mantra.
Without the thread?
Without the thread. The thread goes with the Brahma Gayatri. It doesn't go with the other Gayatris. Like that. The other Gayatris don't require it. But generally speaking, someone who has the Brahma Gayatri then would get those others. That would be the natural progression. So you become Dwija and that's Twija. Right? So then, but that other would be more of a social element because it's a samskar there, so the Vaishnavas weren't really worried about it. But then the problem is the Brahmins think that they're superior to everybody because of the lack of qualification, right? Not because of the position. So then they would consider themselves better than the Vaishnavas. What he wanted to show is that Vaishnavas are the topmost position of brahmanas. So automatically they're brahmanas, and if you only accept them as brahmanas because they have the Brahma Gayatri and the thread, therefore then they all got. Because if you can chant the Pancharatric, why you can't chant the Brahma? Yeah? Does that make sense? So then he had it that it's introduced that everybody gets. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that would be the...
And Srila Prabhupada's idea of ladies' second initiation. It was Srila Prabhupada or Bhaktisiddhanta?
No, but the second where you have the Pancharatric mantras, that men, women would all get. Brahma Gayatri then was only received by the men. Because it's a Purusha mantra. And so therefore it brings out those kind of qualities and purifies up to the platform of liberation. So the feminine nature doesn't actually require it. You know what I'm saying? But because we're working under the influence of the Ionians, therefore equal spiritual opportunity means women get a mantra that actually isn't very good for them to chant. But they have to have it. You know, but you know, so many things that they have aren't good for them, and so they don't care. You know what I'm saying? So that's what it is, because it creates that masculine nature. So if you like, you know, heavy ladies that always harass each other, then hey, you got it. Like that. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and the Acharyas and Prabhupada wanted to avoid that. But since the ladies demanded it, then okay, had it. Doesn't mean that all the problems that come along with it don't come along with it. So in other words, it's not required to advance or worship the deity. Because you don't use it when you worship the deity. You use the Guru, Gaur, and Gopal Kama Gayatris to worship the deity, no? Yeah, so that's another thing. You know what I'm saying? So means if the Purusha Bhava is too much, it may help to reduce it. But then the problem is, once it comes to that state, then it becomes hard to go the other way. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it's just traditionally not used, because the benefit anyway comes from then you know who you're connected to. It's like the husband wears a Brahmin thread. Then part of those threads are the wife's thread. like that. And so the benefit of the samskar of upanayanam, the girl gets through marriage. So the marriage ceremony is for girls. It's not for, you know, anyone else. Understand? Because the boy's already gotten that benefit. So the samskar is the girl's one. The boy happens to be there. You know? Yeah, like that. So that's how that works. But because people don't understand the science of it, therefore then, you know, looking at it from the mundane, non-theistic things, oh, you got to make everything equal. But then why not go along with that? Brahmacharis, you know, men, they have three dhotis, and so women should only have three saris. You know, let's make everything equal. And like this, you know, it's all the same, plain. Yeah, he's got white dhoti. So everyone's got the white dhoti. And then it's on there, so everyone should just be basically wearing white, and you can put on a little color. You're like the Bengalis, right? It's a white thing with a little red border. Like that. And then you only need three of them. Hey, life's good.
Huh? Well, my girl have like 10 sets of colorful bodies.
We all.
Like the boys.
I say.
10 ladies.
10?
Who's we, white
like
man?
The boys and ladies. Everyone.
Which boys? You have 10 sets of...
No, if everything is equal, why should everyone have...
Oh, I see. You're taking it the other way. Why should only get three? You can get 10.
Yeah.
Colorful. Okay, so you get the purple dhotis and everything. And we had one guy here like that. Yeah, we did.
One.
Huh?
There were two like that.
There were two. Oh, okay. I remember one because it was purple. Yeah. Okay. Yes, so then he's saying, why can't they? You know, so then you go to Calcutta to buy saris, but then you also spend the same amount of time going out and buying dhotis. Yeah?
Unisex.
Yeah, so in other words, when you go to Calcutta, then you check, it means you work it out in all the cars that in the back, you know, the seat there, they have the bottle of water. You're right, they should also have a whole bunch of air sickness bags, you know, so. Yeah. Does that make sense? In other words, there's natures are different. And so accordingly, then one gets. So that's the whole idea, is that these things, everyone gets accordingly. You know, man's in a meeting, someone says some snide comment, he can't take it otherwise. He can't say, you know, oh, you're only saying that because I'm a man. Right? But the women will automatically say, oh, you're just saying that because we're women. Does that make sense? So the whole point is, but everybody lets that go. Why? Because that's the feminine nature. You know what I'm saying? So, does that make sense? You know, the conversation is about what the woman wants to talk about, not what the man wants to talk about. Right? No, if the woman's interested in what the man's doing, then he gets to talk about what he's doing until the woman's not interested anymore. Then it stops. Right? But no one minds. Why? Because that's the nature. So since that's we're addressing the nature in everything, why would we therefore then try to make everything equal when it's not? So that's the whole idea. So the point is it's there, it'll work. It's there, but it's not that it's a glory. And then the more that one tries to go into all these things that are areas that men do, you know, then you know it's a problem. You know. Would you be happy that you're ready to go out for the program and the husband takes an extra, you know, 45 minutes because he just had to get his dhoti just right? You understand? But if the husband's sitting there for 45 minutes while the wife gets it right, no one says anything. It's just standard, you know? Or you go to the special, you know, the black tie event like that. The guy's just, you know, black and, you know, like that. And the woman's all in colors. Well, what if she had to wear black?
And he had to wear the colors.
Yeah, and then he had all the colors. Right? You know, if you go south of the Rio Grande, that might work. But north, it won't work. You understand? So that's the whole thing, is that there's so many things that are just accommodated. Like that. Because it's the nature. So that's the whole thing, is why accept the difference in nature in some things and in other things not? Only because I could get more advantage out of it if in this place we drop it. But in these places where I find it, no, here we have to follow it. You know what I'm saying? Because when it makes it equal, it just means that the woman can get what she wants when she wants. Not that the man, it's equal, he can get what he wants when he wants.
Yeah.
You know, I'm saying, no, it's not that. It's not equal. Everything's different, right? What the cat needs is different from what the dog needs, right? Which is different from what the hamster needs. You ever see, anyone gets a little wheel for a dog or a cat? No, you get one for a hamster. Right? You know, and if the hamster starts walking, the back legs stay in place, the front legs start walking and it starts getting longer and longer and longer. And then the back legs start walking and the front legs stop in the back legs. The hamster does that, you think everything's fine. What if your dog did that? You think something's wrong there. Can you imagine that? Your dog starts getting longer. So everything has its nature. Right? You know, the bird has a perch. Right? You know, the cat's up there on the perch, or your dog's up there, you know, it'd be weird. You know, or your bird's curled up on the couch. You know, so that's the thing. Everything has its nature. And because of that, that's how you deal. Does that make sense? I say, you know, the car, you could keep it in the garage or on the street. The horse, you keep in the garage. You don't keep on the street. You know, saying everything has a nature. So that's the whole point, is that the devotees then see things according to their nature. And accordingly, then people get. Does that make sense? So therefore, in certain things, certain people get more. Like, let's say you have a family, the parents and the child. Who gets more attention? The kid. Now it's only husband and wife, no kid. Who gets the attention? The wife. Right? And then the guys down at the pub with the other guys, then he can get attention. You understand? So it's just how, you know. But there it'll be equal, because he'll talk his will. Yeah, my wife. You know, they just keep on going like that. So then when one sees from that platform, then one sees how everybody gets what they require. Then there's no problem, because it's according to nature. It's according to how Krishna arranged it. Now, if one, just as one applies the modern concepts on Krishna consciousness to get one's own benefit, applying the modern concepts on Krishna consciousness to see that others don't get benefit is also just as much of a problem. You know, this thing where people have to, you know, how you say, they're the, how you say, globocop? You know, like that. It's kind of a thing where they feel that they've been self-appointed to find fault in everybody else and correct everybody else. You know, it's like you're sitting there chanting, they have to come up and say something about it, or what you're doing, everything, whatever you're doing, like that. You know, but it's self-appointed. It's not that everybody voted and decided, yeah, this person should do that. No, they're always self-appointed. Is that something? So it's an annoyance, because they're using their own standards to judge whether it's good or not. Does that make sense? So whenever that comes up, it's always a problem. It means the Vedic standard has to be used according to the Vedic standard. You can't use the Vedic standard according to modern. Like that. It'll always create a problem. But you could apply the modern Vedic standard on the modern, and then the modern would start to improve. Right? Because you have a standard how you judge everything. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, how else do you deal? How do you define what is correct or not? You have to have something to judge it according to. Is that what it is? Yes. Sorry? Do women traditionally wear tilak? Yes, that I know of. Means devotees wear tilak. Does Lord Chaitanya wear tilak? Yeah, so he's taking the mood of Radharani, so sick. So in other words, in Braj, maybe there they don't, because they generally, they're not living a Gaudiya lifestyle, are they? Mm-hmm. No, they're living a Braj lifestyle. So there, that'll be more, we'll see it like the Vedic. Right? Does that make sense? Because they're worshipping Narayan and praying to Narayan to protect Krishna and everything like that. The Gaudiyas, they wear tilak. But in Braj, okay, the gopis don't wear tilak, but that's in Braj. We're not in Braj. We're in the Gaudiya Lila. We're the Gaur Lila, so we wear tilak. You know? Yes, because any benefit anyway goes. So it's like this. Okay. Whatever the husband does, the pious credits of that, the wife gets half anyway. So if wearing tilak is pious, then by his wearing the tilak, then she gets half the benefit. By him being simple, dressing simple, you know, living simple, keeping only a few things, that kind of austerity or that renunciation is a benefit. It's a piety. The wife gets half the benefit of that. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is they always get, that's in the Vedic. But in the Gaudiya, then there everybody wears a tilak. You know?
So they put one line.
They put one line. They put one line. They just don't put the feet. Right? Because there's two parts to the Sri Vaishnava tilak. And the Madhuas, they wear the black line? That I'm not sure. Because they only wear a line. They don't wear the other thing. So every line has its tradition. So we don't need to adjust our tradition according to others. Something that's common, you know, that's just the standard Vedic thing, then that will be common. But otherwise, no. But I mean, people get into this, it's just being too... they're mental speculating on something that they think is like Raga Nuga. But Raga Nuga means it doesn't have the mental speculation. You know. Yeah, so that, it's, does that make sense? Yeah, so the way ladies have always wanted to.
So Maharaj, I'm not too, but Upanayam is like initiation for before going to Gurukul.
Upanayanam is that one is then counted as in the capacity where the certain activities that only Brahmins can do, or means only those with that Brahminical qualification can do, then you can do that. But it has its limitation because it's not involved in the Pancharatric level. It's lower than Pancharatric. Right, it's the home worship of the deities, the Shaligram, the Yajnas, the Samskaras. That means someone with Upanayanam could do like that. But the point is that's if it's Vedic, right? But the Pancharatric, they can't worship the deities. They can't touch the deities. They can go into the deity pujari room, the deity room, take things in, bring things out. They can assist, but they can't actually do the worship. Right, but in their own worship, that they can do, but the temple they can't. So it has a limitation.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah. The samskara of initiation that we do, for example, in the temple or whatever.
Yeah, that'll be Pancharatric.
Okay, so they cannot do that.
They can do the yajna for it because they can do yajnas, but they can't like give the, they can't actually initiate someone.
Mm-hmm. No, that's what I understand. I was talking about the yajna.
No, but they can do the fire sacrifice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, technically. But generally speaking, you would not have them do it.
Why not?
Because you're more connecting it to Pancharatra.
Mm-hmm. What about vivaha?
Means they could do, but the point is there'd have to be maturity there. So where would we find someone with maturity to do that, and they wouldn't be second initiated? You understand? So, generally speaking, we would take it all the way through. Does that make sense?
No.
Means if you were going to do a marriage ceremony where you could go through, instruct everyone, guide everyone, train everyone, do everything, that would require some maturity and understanding of the whole thing that's there. That doesn't come with Upanayana. That would come because the second initiation, then you would count that person is more mature, this fixed in devotional service, so they would be able to do such things. It's not that technically you couldn't have the Upanayana do the yajna, but generally speaking you never would. So they just do the yajnas on their level, but technically they could do it. Now in the Vedic system, someone, a Brahmin, would only have Upanayana, they wouldn't have anything else. And so they would have that maturity. They would have finished their education. They would be able to take that up. You know what I'm saying? So they can on their own. But otherwise, if they're not, it's only Upanayanam. They haven't got all that training. So if they're working under someone else, and someone else is doing the wedding, and they're just doing the yajna, technically it could happen. But generally speaking, because these things are cultural and they're a little refined, then because of the aspect of gray, and how you say, and devotees tend to be gray blind, they either see black or white, so it's better to avoid those things. Because you can always come up, but what if they got, because the point is if they went through the whole thing and graduated, you know, properly and all that, then they would still only assist. It can't be that they're doing the ceremony. You know what I'm saying?
I remember somewhere we read, it was in the Bhagavatam, that for yogis it's better if young brahmacharis do. Which ones are those?
That's doing, but they'll have been initiated into the Shrauta. So they will be equivalent of second initiation, but on the Vedic level. See, our you could say third initiation, technically, then is within the Pancharatra, but their third is within the Vedic. So they're initiated into the Shrauta Yajnas, which is all part of the Brahmanas of the Veda. So the Upanayanam, now they can study the Veda and chant the Vedic mantras and do the Yajnas. But that means that they can just do the things like the Griya Sutras, Dharma Sutras, that kind of level of stuff. But the Shrauta is above that. That's much more complicated and everything like that. That takes it further. So to do an Ashwamedha Yajna and everything like that, then they have to be initiated into there. So if they are qualified at that point, then they can get initiated at that point. It can also be as after they're graduated, but before they're married. You know what I'm saying? Or if they're married, they're young. They've been married young. Because in the Vedic standard, most of the time, they either went for a much later date, 24 or 32, or they got, they graduated at 16 and got married. You know what I'm saying? So everything would start earlier. So if they were younger, because the longer you go, then the more the material kind of things come up. But otherwise, this thing with the brahmacharis. So they're doing all the different things, but you have someone who is second initiated that's taking care of all these things. Or they themselves are second initiated. So it's a delicate thing, because if you misuse it, then it'll just create trouble. Because some try to take it as an easy way out of second initiation, but the point is the qualification of the second means you have to have the brahminical nature and have the devotional. The Upanayana means you have to have the brahminical nature. Mm-hmm. So, if you're 16 and below, then you could qualify for the brahminical nature. But if you're above 16, you can't use Upanayana. You're actually banned from using it. That's also not an understood point. Because if you haven't gotten Upanayana by the time you're 16, then if you're from a Dvija family, you're considered fallen. Right? Because you didn't get. Why not? Because you didn't qualify. You didn't make the effort, or whatever reason. So you can't get. That's it. So you're not counted in that. You know, you're part of the family, but you'll be counted as a Dvija Bandhu. Does that make sense? So that's how it works. Now, for devotees who are above 16, then it's because of chanting the holy name and the aspect of the Pancharatrik Diksha. Therefore, then, like bell, how you say bell metals, or is it Mercury's turned? Bell metals turned into gold. Mercury's turned into gold. I don't remember which one it mentions. Bell metals turned into gold. Then, like that, then the body is changed. So now you can say now it can get, because it's up to 16. So if you just change the body now, then that means you can get, because now you're 0 years old. So you reset the clock. So it's only through the the potency of the Bhagavat and the Pancharatrik, that then therefore the Vedic can be gained. So there's no shortcut. It's not that, oh, we have a whole bunch of new bhaktas, but we need some pujaris, so we could just give them upanayanam. No, one, they're not qualified, and two, they don't have the brahminical nature, because if they have brahminical nature, why aren't they getting second initiation? You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. You have to be very careful about it, because this whole point is that it's a hard, generally people aren't understanding the difference between the Bhagavat, the Pancharatrik, and the Vedic, and how it works. So the thing is the Vedic requires the most material qualification. The Bhagavat requires the least. Like that. So the Bhagavat Pancharatrik don't actually require any material qualification. It has to have that faith, that things like that. That's what it requires. But the Vedic, it requires the material qualification. You don't have these nice qualities. You're not peaceful, you're not this and that. You're not qualified for upanayana. But you'll see devotees that have good faith, their sadhana is good, but they're disturbed as anything. You know? Just, you know, come up, sit down too close to them, you know, talk to them at the wrong time, and they'll bite your head off. So you know what I'm saying? So it's from the Pancharatrik side only that they're qualified. But because they had accepted Krishna, they're accepted as Brahmins from that part. So they're Vaishnavas, the topmost Brahmin, but it's not necessarily that they have the material Brahmin qualifications. So that's the thing, is that in this range of sadhana, you're having to deal with these two things at once. But by chanting and continuing the process, they will develop those qualities. So after a while, they will be real nice and gentle and all that. That'll just come automatically if they keep up the process. Does that make sense? So it's only because they have the Pancharatrik, then you can finesse the Upanayanam aspect. But if it's only Upanayanam, then if they don't have the material qualifications, they're not qualified. You know, it's not just it's lower, but at the same time as then if it's lower, why is the Pancharatrik weights? The Pancharatrik is divided into two, so you get the Bhagavat aspects first, and then you get the Vedic aspects after. You understand? Because it requires more material qualification, more steadiness. In other words, because of devotional service, you've qualified, you start to see now the material qualifications going up. So those qualifications technically are spiritual, but they've come, you see it in that. Does that make sense? You know, so it's like you take up something and they're doing something, but they're not very good at it. Like, say someone takes up cooking, they're not very good at it. But now they do it for a long time, then you start to see they become good at it. So they're the cook, but they're not so qualified. But with time, they're the cook and qualified. So that's what's happening. Is that you get second initiation, then you start to go, then with time the brahminical comes. Because of the potency of the Pancharatrik mantras. And if you don't use the Pancharatrik mantras with that, until they have that brahminical qualification, you can say, oh, but that, you know, how will that doesn't make sense. It does if you're from Brahmin families. It means what we're looking for in a second initiated devotee as far as culture, they have. Just they don't have the faith. You know what I'm saying? So they have that. That's why they are Brahmins. That's why they chant the Gayatri. That's why they do all the things that they do. Because they do have that material qualification. Yes.
Can we say that when Srila Prabhupada came first to the West, and he started from the Bhagavad immediately?
Yeah, that's why 64 rounds.
Because he saw that devotees have qualifications, or he didn't know what.
No, because that's the universal aspect. Because that was the standard in India. You came, you know, you joined the temple, you chanted 64 rounds. Right? Now they only chant 16. But before, they chanted 64 rounds. That was, you were a mutt devotee, you chanted 64 rounds. That's all. You know what I'm saying? And it's only those who are out preaching all the time, then they would just do 16. But that was the standard. Does that make sense? So if someone was fully engaged, let's say they were doing six artik, six offerings a day, cooking for the deities, they may only do 16. So in other words, you have to do 16 rounds on your beads and then 48 rounds equivalent in direct service. So that's why preaching is direct, deity worship's direct. you know, cleaning the temple, doing stuff for the, you know, like that, serving the Vaishnava, these are all direct activities. So in other words, there has to be 64 rounds equivalent, but it's not that, oh, I'll do 64 rounds and chant no japa. No, 16 is minimum. Right? Otherwise, one may not get that proper taste for the name. Does that make sense? So then Prabhupada came in with that. We chant 64 rounds and do Hari Nam and everything like that. If that didn't work out, then 32, then okay, 16 minimum. But they were still doing all the Hari Nam and all the temple and everything. Then he saw with time that wasn't enough, so you had to introduce, you know, more of the Pancharatrik. So he, in, I think in 1970, he introduced the Pancharatrik lifestyle. Otherwise, before that, they didn't have that. They just got up in the morning, chanted, you know, studied like that, took prasad, went out on Hari Nam for 12 hours. You know, that was just the standard day. And then if there were programs late at night, then they would do that, you know, like Christmas or other things where there were more. If you just don't move, they don't bother you. Well, that one likes you. Here. Yeah, just wait, clap. No, you, when they're doing that, don't you just put your finger in front of them and they'll walk on your finger. And then you get rid of them. Because if you poke them, they might sting. If you're peaceful, they don't bother you because they just think you're a tree or something. they don't sting trees. Huh? Oh, now it's on your shoulder. Yeah. You must like the colors or something. Or you all smell nice or something. See what I'm saying? Because when they're in the front, you just don't, if you put your finger, they'll just walk on and then you can take them outside. No, it's farther away. No, no. Someone else has to say. You can't see it. In the front, yeah. And then you take it outside, then when they see the light, they'll fly off. Oh, it's back. Ooh, now there's two of them. Oh, no, this is a Gigi. Because they have a good sense of smell, so... I guess that they come land on the knees and don't smell bad. Smell good. No. Maybe. Okay. So.
Why does the Vedic overall Brahmin gets initiation at an early age and the Kshatriyas and the Vaishyas
are later? Why the Brahmin, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas are later? Because they tend to be a little bit more materially inclined. Mm-hmm. Like that. So, and it also depends on whether they're interested in the spiritual development or just the basic qualifications. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So in other words, Brahmin gets, if they're interested in spiritual, then Brahmin gets Upanayanam at 5, Kshatriya at 6, Vaishya at 8. If they're not interested in the spiritual, they're only interested in the cultural, you know, and the practical stuff, then Brahmin at 8, Kshatriya at 11, Vaishya at 12. So it's just a matter of that, because it's just the nature. Because Brahmins will probably discuss more philosophy with their kids, explain things more, so they'll mature at a quicker rate. Also, it's a funny thing that many times with the Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, they're kids for longer. And then when they do mature, then they can do so much more. Mm-hmm. So it may work on the principle of, the Bengali principle of Beshi Badmash, Beshi Badra. So however much nonsense they are as a kid, that much they'll be gentle when they grow up.
Even South, they say like that.
They say that.
It's a gentle principle and it applies.
Yeah, yeah.
Means if they're good at when they're kids, it goes reverse.
So you have to see. But generally means boys. Boys tend to be very...
They should be very naughty.
Yeah, naughty. It doesn't mean that they... Yeah, it's not that they're violent or this or that. It just means naughty is that they just come up with strange things to do, you know, or how they want to do it or don't want to do it. You know, do this. No, I'm not doing it. So, you know, come sit down. I don't want to sit down. You know, like that. You know, But after saying, I don't want to sit down, then if they want to sit down, then they'll come and sit down, because you said, no, they're not going to sit down. So. You know, they just do those funny things. And, Yeah, it's just like that. And then when they grow up, then they become very, very gentle. So it's the way it is. Girls generally are supposed to be quiet all the way through. You know, that's why I think, what do you call it? Gandhari, even though she had 100 sons, she still wanted one daughter. They're peaceful, you know, you can dress them up, and, you know, stuff like that. Boys, you're trying to put on the T-lock, they move their head, you know, all that stuff.
There is one story during Bhaktisiddhanta Siddhartha. He has two disciples. One devotee was taking management administration of the temple, and he was chanting 16 hours, and he used to go around the temples and look after. And another devotee was there who was staying in temple doing 64 rounds. So, and the person who is going around the temples, he comes and complains to Bhaktisiddhanta. This person is just sitting here and chanting 64 rounds, not doing anything. In Bhaktisiddhanta, you come and you also do. I'll feed you, I'll provide you, I'll be given special room for you.
Okay.
Then he comes and does for one day, then he comes and does. No. That job is only better, I'll go.
Yeah, so it matches. That's the thing, is nature. That's the whole idea, is that those who are in a position of authority, they're supposed to see the nature of the individual. And accordingly, then engages them. So the whole idea was, this Prabhupada thought they could chant 64 rounds and do Harinam and do the whole thing like that, but slowly, then it didn't, and you had to introduce the Pancharatrik. Then that was running for a little time, then he said that we have to introduce the Vedic. You know, because there's need of a community like that, so then they had to introduce the Vedic. Because the Vedic will accommodate community. So that's the point. We want community. Without the Vedic, that doesn't work.
Even our temple president, Dayaram Prabhu, says, if anyone is there in the temple who can chant 16 rounds, it is to the management. Provide him a separate room. All facilities for him. No one dares to come forward.
Yeah. Because, so that's the whole thing. You like, you do. You don't like, you don't. So just Prabhupada was seeing what was working. And he's just analyzing. You go there and deal like that. And then afterwards, when Prabhupada was asked, would you change anything? You know, because so many times, okay, we do stuff, and would you change anything? Oh, yeah, I do this. Prabhupada said, no. Because the whole point is that they got that Bhagavat kind of exposure. Then the Pancharatra go better. Then if you introduce the Vedic, that'll work better. So, you know, it needed to go that way. So Prabhupada said he wouldn't change anything. So people can do nice. But, you know, they're not. You have occasionally devotees who do. You know, they chant 64 rounds and that. But we had a devotee in the Gurukul when I first joined. That it was some years later that I found out he would chant 64 rounds every day. Because he did his full service. But, you know, being from, you know, Vaishnava background and that, so then he was, you know, very sattvic. You know, so then he could chant at night, get up early and chant. You know, whenever there was extra time, he wouldn't just be doing something stupid, he would be chanting. So in other words, if you had the opportunity to chant or go on the internet and you decided to chant, right, that person you give the room and all those things. You know, because that's the thing, they would rather do that. So he was chanting 64 rounds, he was taking care of the kids and that. And then, it was after some time, I found out that every Ekadasi, he would do Nirjal. And his services, he would do everything. And at this time, he and one other devotee had 60 small kids. You know, that means, you know, 10 on down. You know, most of them would be like the 6 to 8. 60. Two guys. And it worked perfectly. They'd all get up on time, get the bath on time, everything would work so smoothly. So that's the thing, is they could do that. And he would, you know, follow near Jal on Ekadasi, not eat anything, and he'd chant 64 rounds every day. So that was just... So it is possible if you don't waste any time. You know? Anyway, does that make sense? But the tendency is, nowadays, people wasting time is their pleasure. So that's why they can't do it. Or they have to be busy doing some other kind of practical service. So then, you know, chanting that many rounds doesn't work for them. So, yeah. But nice. Yeah. The offer's there. No? No, it's taking. Okay. Okay. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, in this age, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur introduced the sacred thread ceremony for his Vaishnava disciples with the idea that people should understand that when one becomes a Vaishnava, he has already acquired the qualifications of a Brahmana. Therefore, in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, in other words, the devotees have gained the philosophical understanding of a Brahmana, which is the most important aspect of a Brahmana, because one who knows Brahman is a Brahmana. So they understand Brahman and understand, you know, Prara Brahman. So from that aspect, culturally there might be a bit of a lag, depending on the individual, their background, their particular, you know, upbringing and training. But with time, that lag will be covered. Does that make sense? But if someone is just culturally, then they can be a Brahman, but philosophically they don't actually understand Brahman or the Brahman platform, then technically they may do those little brahminical things, but they're not in a position to give those blessings. Mm-hmm. Like that. Now, if they're nicely situated in the understanding of Brahman, though they're not Vaishnavas, then they could give blessings that would have effect, but that's even going to be more rare. Does that sound sincere?
Maharaj, depends
that we have a Vaishnava guru and a Vaishnava. Yes, Vaishnava guru or non-Vaishnava. And Vaishnava, you know, Vaishnava upbringing or non-Vaishnava upbringing. Because the smartest that are there, they follow very, very nicely. I mean, it's getting less and less, but before, follow very nicely. Their standards of cleanliness, the regularity, how they would do everything would be exactly according to what should be done, because that's the meaning of smarter. They follow the rules. It's all about the rules. And so they see that the rules are a benefit, they follow the rules, they get the benefit. They don't follow the rules, they don't get the benefit. So they're going to follow the rules. So for them, it's just natural. You know, and it's been there for generations. Every one of those families, they can easily list off 7 generations. Some of them can probably take it back more. You know? So it's just, that's the way it's been. So then they can do that. But if someone doesn't have that cultural upbringing, but they can understand the philosophy, because that's the nature of the soul, then you just have to wait for the conditioned nature to catch up. That's all. So sense, Krishna consciousness, is the important thing. And if that's functioning, then that's what we'll emphasize. So now those who are Brahmins just by the cultural aspect, they won't appreciate that, because they're not actually Brahmins on the actual position of Brahman, meaning realization. They're only culturally Brahmins. Like that. And some of them aren't culturally Brahmins, they just take the position of being born in that family, they claim to be social. So they're only socially Brahmins. So those we especially don't, we'll respect them because of that good birth and association, but we wouldn't let them do stuff. Right? But if those are culturally, then they could do stuff, but we wouldn't have them involved in the devotional. But if then they have all of that, then that's, or if they have the devotional but not necessarily the cultural, then they can be engaged. But if they have both, that's the best. Everyone will appreciate that. Does that make sense? So since that's the most important, therefore we run with it even though it's not ideal. And sometimes you get problems. So those who are Vaishnavas, you know, then that are not our line, then they'll accept that they can be. But then because of the lack of the culture, sometimes they get a little disturbed. Mm. Like that. Mm. Does that make sense? But, you know, they don't generally close down the temples of that. But if they're from the smarter background, so they only have the cultural, not the philosophical, then when we behave badly, they actually close the temples, don't allow us to come. Okay. So, that's... Therefore, in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness, those who are twice initiated, so as to become brahmanas, must bear in mind their great responsibility to be truthful, control the mind and senses, be tolerant, and so on. So, he's not saying is that because you've got it, automatically it's there. He says you should be mindful to be pursuing this. Right? Control, be tolerant, and so on. So those qualities that are there, it's expected that you have the potential for it. You're either showing that or have the potential for that. Therefore, you should do it. Not just, okay, we got it. Now we don't have to worry about it. So the whole thing is, if you don't want to do these things and that, then simple, don't get second initiated. And then don't try to prove that first initiation is just as good and we don't require it. No, those who get it, then it's all that. You don't do that either. So that's the whole point, is that these qualifications, these are the standard. There is an absolute standard. So if the modern appreciates it or not, that actually doesn't matter. Okay. Then their life will be successful. It was such Brahmins that Nanda Maharaj invited to chant the Vedic hymns, not ordinary Brahmins. Verse 13 distinctly mentions himsa mana. The word mana refers to false prestige or pride. Those who are falsely proud, thinking that they were Brahmanas because they were born in Brahmin families, were never invited by Nanda Maharaj on such occasions. You understand? So here we see, therefore, that's your? Yeah, and then from, it was such Brahmanas, that's your? You know, then that gives the conclusion of that. So that whole, from that point you could say, that's actually the upaya. Means the upanaya, right? Nigamana. Mm-hmm. When Brahmins were free from envy, untruthful, unnecessary pride, grudges, disturbance by the opulence of others, and false prestige, their blessings never go in vain. Right? And then you could add this part from this one here. Oh, that means this would be considered part of that also.
Yeah, it is a part of the Nigamana.
You know? The word mana refers to. So the word mana refers to false prestige or false pride. Those who are falsely proud, thinking they were Brahmins because they were born in Brahmin families, were never invited by Nanda Maharaj on such occasions. When Brahmins are free from envy, untruthfulness, unnecessary pride, grudges, disturbances by the opulence of others, and false prestige, their blessings never go in vain. That's your Nigamana.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. Really moving along here, right? See? Yeah, it took us, took us over an hour to do half a page, and then we did two pages just in a few moments. Chapter 8. Lord Krishna shows the universal form within his mouth. Right? He just showed it before, right?
Yeah.
But that was when he was sitting on the lap. This is a different one. Pratigya. The four Varnas, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, must be present in society. The Brahmins are required for the guidance of the whole society. In other words, you need all four of them for a society to run, but of that, you have to have the Brahmins established first, because then they will guide everybody else. So if you have Brahmins, they can create Kshatriyas. Kshatriyas then will create a peaceful environment, therefore Vaishyas and Shudras will be able to prosper and perform their duties. Does that make sense? So by qualification, by character, you have to create Brahmins and Kshatriyas. And then by occupational, the occupations of Vaishyas and Shudras can prosper in a environment of peace. Right? Does that make sense? If it's peaceful, Vaishyas will find it. Shudras will do Shudra stuff, and Vaishyas will figure out how to make money from them. Right? But the point is, if Shudras can't do Shudra stuff, they don't have money. How will the Vaishyas get money from them? Right? And you can't run a business if things aren't peaceful. If every time you open your shop, a brick goes through your front window, then things don't work out so good. Okay? So that's the... Because if there are no such... if there's no such institution as Varnashram Dharma, and if human society has no such guide as the Brahman, human society will be hellish. In Kali Yuga, especially at the present moment, there's no such thing as a real Brahmana, and therefore society is in a chaotic condition. The Krishna consciousness movement is therefore very much eager to reintroduce the Varnashram system into human society, so that those who are bewildered or less intelligent will be able to take guidance from qualified Brahmanas. So here it says, the Krishna consciousness movement is therefore very much eager to reintroduce. So it's not that, oh, we chant, we're above the rules. Yes, if you're the guy in that room who just chants all day, comes out to take darshan of the deities, arti, do some, you know, cleaning in the temple, some service for the deities, and that's all you do, then, okay, you're not worried about Varnashram. We'll say you're chanting Hare Krishna. We don't care for the rules. But if you're not doing that, you need Varnashram. Does that make sense? It's basically that simple. Brahmana means Vaishnava. After one becomes a Brahmana, the next stage of development in human society is to become a Vaishnava. People in general must be guided to the destination or goal of life, and therefore they must understand Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Brahmanism is not a system meant to create a monopoly for a particular class of men. Everyone should be educated so as to become a Brahmana, regardless of whether one is born in a Brahmin family, a Kshatriya family, or a Shudra family. One may be guided by proper Brahmana and be promoted to the highest platform of being a Vaishnava. Thus, the Krishna consciousness movement affords an opportunity to develop the right destiny for the human society. Right? So here you see, this is interesting. Thus, the Krishna consciousness movement, like that. So that means is that then that is there. So Prabhupada, in this case, see, in the previous one, he just reiterated exactly, basically, word for word in the Nigamana. Sometimes he'll take it, having said this, the four Varnas, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra, must be present in society. The Brahmins are required for the guidance of the whole society. You know, and so, because we're doing that, thus the Krishna consciousness movement affords an opportunity to develop the right destiny for human society. You understand? So, sometimes Prabhupada will take it to the next step, or a further explanation. And sometimes he'll just leave it as it is, or just add a little bit. The point is that... So, everyone's educated to become a Brahmana, therefore everyone can become Vaishnava. So when it comes to the ashram thing, there is no difference there. Then whatever your position, you can give guidance in Krishna consciousness, it's valued. Right? But when it comes to the Varna side of it, then according to your occupation and everything like that, there is a hierarchy and you will be guided by the one above you. That's just the way it works. So you can't level it out there. You have to make a distinction between Varna and Ashram. If you don't, then that's Varna Shankara. It means it's the Varna things are mixed. Does that make sense? Chapter 8, summarized as questions and answers. Maharaj Parikshit asks Srila Sukadev Goswami question 10.10 of Srimad Bhagavatam. Question 10.10. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.8, 46. Having heard of the great fortune of Mother Jashoda, Parikshit Maharaj inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, O learned Brahmana, Mother Jashoda's breast milk was sucked by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. What past auspicious activities did she and Nanda Maharaj perform to achieve such perfection in ecstatic love? Srila Sukadeva Goswami answers this question in verses 48-51, when he reveals that Nanda Maharaj and Mother Jashoda were previously Drona and Dara. The question asked by Nanda Maharaj to Garga Muni in verse 3 and by Mother Jashoda in verse 34 and 40 are not philosophical in nature and therefore does not come under this study. Adhyaya Prakashika. The summary of the 8th chapter is as follows. This chapter describes the ceremony of giving a name to Krishna. It also describes his crawling, his playing with the cows, and his eating earth, and again showing the universal form to his mother. So again, so this is the second, right? One day, Vasudeva sent for Gargamuni, the family priest of the Yadu Vamsa, and thus Gargamuni went to the house of Nanda Maharaj, who received him very well, and requested him to give names to Krishna and Balaram. Gargamuni, of course, reminded Nanda Maharaj that Kamsa was looking for the son of Devaki, and said that if he performed the ceremony very gorgeously, the ceremony would come to the notice of Kamsa, who would then suspect that Krishna was the son of Devaki. Right? Because Gargamuni is the priest of the Yadus, not of the residents of Braja. Mm-hmm. So if he goes out there and does that ceremony for the boy and the Namkar, and it's, you know, and then how, why would he be there? You know, then if they said, well, Nanda Baba wanted to do something nice, and he heard that, you know, that they have a nice priest, so then he came there and then inquired and did all that, then okay, then you leave it. But he didn't. Vasudev sent him. Nanda Baba was involved. So why would Vasudev send for someone else's kid to do Namakarna? Send his own priest to do Namakarna? Then he would doubt what's going on here. Because the omen did say Vasudev's son. Right? And so then, you know, so okay, there's a daughter, but was there a son also? And so they got tricked. You know? So just think, because every time before it was one child, and so now is he saw one child, and then it didn't work out, and you know, that the son, you know, so therefore he may think it was some trick. So elsewhere means, okay, they're sitting here. Elsewhere means he was born on the other side of the room, and he's hiding over there. So they're, you understand? So the demons, they're, yeah. Because Balaram, the son of Rohini, increases the transcendental bliss of others, his name is Rama. And because of his extraordinary strength, he is called Baladeva. He attracts the Yadus to follow his instructions, and therefore his name is Sankarsana. Krishna, the son of Yashoda, previously appeared in many other colors, such as white, red, and yellow, and he has now assumed the color of black. Because he was sometimes the son of Vasudeva, his name is Vasudeva. According to his various activities and qualities, he has many other names. After thus informing Nandamars and completing the name-giving ceremony, Gargamuni advised Nandamars to protect his son very carefully and then departed. Right, so he shows that they have so many names. Right. Sukadeva Goswami next described how the two children crawled. Okay, no, we'll stop there.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi. Jai Prabhupada.